hosts, you just get in this frame of mind where every verb is a potential pun. So we've learned to live with that challenge so far. There's additional elements here also. It's not just the pun. It's like I said, the performance art that we spoke about, Zriya, and about the question of whether it all goes back to that first moment of planting the seed. So we had to start the topic at the end of a previous year and had most of the discussion later, and we posed the question how that parallels the Malacha of Zriya. So here we'll take a similar step. We'll see how many Malachas we can carry this out for. But in terms of the Malacha of Choresh, which we're officially starting today, even though we did try to slip it in last week by announcing its existence, the Malacha of Choresh, we'll try to keep on an even pace, try to do it this week and be finished by the end of the week, and Halacha L'maisa on both Zriya and Choresh on Sunday. And just try to keep a pace so that we can cover many more Malachos. But basically what I think will happen today is that we'll plow the field, essentially, that we'll lay out some of the key issues. That's what I'm saying, so I'm saying this pun's not just in the choice of verb, but in the way the topics get structured, that we will try to lay out some of the issues to potentially be planted on top of over the next 2 days. So let's see how that plays out, because Choresh is a fascinating malacha. It's a malacha that, in general, with all of the malachas of Shabbos, there's so much of an interconnectedness of you take each malacha one malacha at a time, and each one involves discussions that impact on all the other malachas because of certain underpinnings. So Choresh is no less the case in that instance, that we try to figure out just how Choresh exists and what exactly it means. It has ripple effects on how we understand all the other malachos. And Choresh, you should also know, just anticipation of Sunday, even for those of you non-farmers in the room, if any of you may not actually be farmers, Choresh does have a lot of practical implications, often in terms of the Gzeros, the Gzeros, the Rabbanan, and the like. There are many areas in which Choresh comes up in our day-to-day lives, or our week-to-week lives, so stay tuned for the Halacha L'maisa discussion. So there's a lot of relevance in Choresh, both to itself, to Malacha Shabbos in general, and to practical Halacha. That being said, so we pose the question, what is Choresh? What does it mean? How do we translate it into English, into a concept? What do we have so far? We threw this question out at the end of last week. Rashi. What could Choresh mean? Right, so before we mentioned it names, what conceptually, what could Choresh potentially mean? So it could mean, what does that mean in English, let's say?
Healing
will actually mean the weakening, the wrath. Right, that weakening will end a little bit. Or, mentioned another possibility, that it was
operation
on the land, which is a very open term. I mentioned Avodas Karka, and that's going to be in terms of figuring out what the action is. And as we've seen, with Malachos in general, we usually have to figure out both a form and a function. So here, there's some type of ambiguity in terms of both. And there's some type of ambiguity when one blends into the other. So we just heard two possibilities. I mean, maybe it has to do with weakening land, and maybe it has to do with acting upon land, with working the land. So we'll try to see how that fits into the context of a larger discussion, how it fits into Rishon. Yes, sir?
I don't understand the second answer. There's Ripoyara, which is to weaken the land. The second one is? The
second one might be a broader type of working the land, and maybe we'll call it improving the land. Maybe we'll call it acting upon the land, doing some type of malacha onto the land itself, which might be broader than simply weakening it. So just to note, especially because we talked about Zriya, so we first mentioned the shear, so there is somewhat of a discussion here as well, even though you think it's a much simpler story, because the Mishnah actually tells us what the shear is for Charisha. It's not so simple, because the Mishnah does say that the Charisha, the shear, is a kol shehu, which sounds like it is really nothing, essentially no shear. And the Rishalmi has a little bit differently. The Rishalmi has a minimal amount of growth that it tries to talk about in terms of what should be the shear. And there is a discussion. Does that mean there is a machlokus between the Bavli and the Rishalmi about this?
Or is it that kolshehu doesn't mean exactly what we think it means? Maybe kolshehu doesn't mean no shear, and this is something we talked about in Zriya a little bit, right? Does kolshehu mean no shear? Or does kolshehu just mean a very small shear? And that was part of why we had some ambiguity in terms of Zareya. And there's some ambiguity here as well, that either the Babli is saying there's no shear, the Yushalmi is saying there's a very small shear. Some do indeed understand them to be arguing on this point. And others will understand that, no, they're saying the same thing. The shear is so small, we might as well call it a kolshehu. It's a tiny, insignificant shear. And why is that shear so small? So our Gemara makes it pretty clear. Why is the shear so small? Because with even a small amount, you can basically grow anything. You are able to have real sustenance come out of a small hole. You make a small hole in the ground, you can put it in the seed, you put it in the seed, you can grow something big. So therefore, that seems to do what we need. Yes.
When we learn with the Rambam says kol shir, it makes it seem like it's an actual shear. And you think about that kol shir literally means anything that is.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? It is. Something. But right. As if it's a building unit for measuring something.
So you're contrasting it with, let's say, an ancient hood. An ancient hood would be nothing.
Right, that actually means nothing. Right. So kol shir, it's like as if saying, you know, the functional unit of life is a cell. So too, the functional unit of horish
or minimal unit.
Is kol shir. What's kol shir? It's a certain amount.
It's an interesting point. So you can take it either side, because even if it was less than that, if it, instead of being an is, there's an isn't, so then there would be nothing to talk about.
Right.
So it has to be somewhat of an is. Right. You're saying calling it an is already is granting it enough of a recognition.
Right. Is a kigrogeras.
Yeah, you could be right. You could be right. It's smaller than a kigrogeras, but it's something very small, but it's not so small that we can't say there's a shear at all.
Right.
Okay. Can we re-up? Anyone else over here?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
When it comes to Zriya, so we said kolshehu, and part of the reason is that like that little seed itself can turn it.
Right.
Here we're talking about horish. It's mm-hmm. not the item itself. It just could add to it. So it's like kind
right.
of...
Right. So what do you see from there? So that's going to lead into our point a little bit. So then what do you see from there? You're saying that it shouldn't be relevant to horish. That if we were interested in planting, so then yes, we're interested in what will eventually grow out of here. But we're talking about a different malacha here. We're talking about horish. So why are we so interested in the fact that this little bit of choresh is going to lead to a bigger plant? So what does that seem to indicate to us, or be a little bit of a clue? That there's apparently some linkage happening here between charisha and zriya, and that's why this sheer discussion is very relevant. That the fact that the Gemara seems to really be explicitly connecting them, that since this can give you a big zriya, so therefore the charisha makes the cut. Therefore the charisha is significant. Hi.
I know in Pesachim there's an argument that in terms of chametz, it's aser v'kolshehu.
Mm-hmm.
And there that's contrasted to something, let's say, baser v'chol, or treif, which would be batel v'shishim.
Mm-hmm.
And they imply that kolshehu would be more chomer than that. But if it's more chomer than batel v'shishim, if you have like a tiny, tiny, let's say a shot glass or something, and you have 1/60 of it is treif, so that's going to be treif. But if you have any, let's say, chametz in it, it has to be even smaller than that. So it gets like to be infinitely small. The fact that it's compared to something that's 1/60. 1/60 is relative to whatever it is.
You're bringing like proof to the fact that a kol shehu could be a very small amount.
It could be infinitely small.
Right, so we know kol shehu is
not
small.
Not an amount.
Right, so that we understand that essentially it is essentially the smallest unit we can talk about. I guess our question just is that called a shear, or is that another way of saying there's no shear? Another way of saying...
But if it always has to be less than 1/60, then 1/60 can be smaller and smaller.
It's a tiny amount.
It's a
very small amount, right? No question. Hi.
Once you're saying that the shear is a tiny amount, mm-hmm. or that it's no shear, that's, I mean, that has to be some action. Because otherwise, it's nice to talk about.
So like if I poke a fork into the ground, is that
once you're making it super small,
mm-hmm.
then that space between no shear and very small shear is
irrelevant. Right, so for practical purposes, it's practically irrelevant, which is essentially what the point of those who say there's no machlokas here is reflecting, that there isn't really going to be much of a difference in real life. But what's of interest to us more, especially us non-farmers and us non-Lilliputian farmers who are working on some kind of farm inside of a bottle that's too small to grow anything, So especially if that's what we're talking about. So our main interest is the point that the Gemara makes, that linking this to the growth of what's going to come out of it apparently shows some type of a relationship between Harisha and Zriya in a strong sense. So that being the case, and with that framework, so we looked at the fact that the Rishonim seem to be on different pages about this. So who is the most prominent advocate of the Rifuye Arga school? Yes, sir? The Miri, but I'll say even more famous than the Miri, which seems to be Rashi. Now, Rashi is all over the place, and a number of Rashis. Rashi seems to be saying frequently that, in a number of places, that the definition of Harisha, or the working function of Harisha, is that you're weakening land. And he has a Gemara behind him. What Gemara does he have? Moedkad. Moedkad and Beis and Beis seems to point you in that direction as well, that the focus is Rifuyei Ara. On the other hand, we have the Rambam. So the Rambam, in his discussion of the Toldos of Choresh, which is where he gets closer to defining it, when he talks about the Toldos, he talks about all the other actions, which, or whether we want to call them Toldos or not, well, the different actions. We'll talk about that probably tomorrow, about what's a told and what's not, in terms of, but he talks about the different actions that are included within Choresh, whether they are of us or toldos. So he says a principle there, that everything that is liafos es hakarka, anything that's there to improve the land, is going to be a reflection of Choresh. And he's also got a Gemara. Right, what Gemara does he have? He has Yerushalmi, that's true, but he also has a Bavli. Right? He has a Bavli, well, it's related to Gemara Mishachim, but what about Bavli on Kuf Gimel? Right? So they're commenting on the Gemara of HaChoresh Kol Shehu. So the Gemara has this case of HaTolish Olshin, somebody who's taking out these endives from the field. And what expression does the Gemara have in that context? Liyapos es hakarka. Right, the purpose of doing this is to improve the karka. Now, of course, that word liyapos, by the way, will throw a little bit of a monkey wrench into things. There's a little bit of another level of ambiguity, because the word can mean a couple of things. Literally, it means really to beautify, but it could also mean to improve. And that difference could be very significant. That difference might affect us a little bit. So we'll have to figure out how much of a proof this is for anything. But on the surface, the Rambam has this Gemara. Now, I should mention parenthetically that another reason why the Rambam may or may not have this Gemara, besides the ambiguity of Liapos, is it's not 100% clear what... You saw this Gemara, this was on the Maamar Kohen, you saw this Gemara, that this Gemara, it's not 100% clear what Malacha is talking about. Many assume it's talking about Choresh, that's where the Mishnah started off. But the Gemara does introduce, the Gemara does use the word Tolesh. Tolesh is an aspect of Kotzer, and it's possible this is actually a different Malacha. And that's the view the Ramban took. So if this is about a different Malacha, it's not really going to tell us so much. And how exactly do Kotzer and improving lands relate? We can talk about that pretty soon. We'll get up to Kotzer. But it's possible this Gemara may not be a great source for us, because maybe it's talking about something else. Yes, Sammy?
I'm saying when the Rambam uses the lashon of liapos, so that whatever the Gemara means by liapos, he would probably be meaning the same thing.
Correct, but saying whether or not this Gemara is a proof for him.
I'm saying his lashon is liapos is a karka, so
right.
For whatever the Gemara means. So I mean, whether there's a machlokas between the Rashi and the Rambam.
Mm-hmm.
Why would it not be? It would be a good proof for the Rambam. I mean, except for the second point. But.
Right. Well, assuming that the Rambam is correct that this Gemara is talking about Choresh, if it's not, it's just not relevant to him.
Right. No,
he might be right anyway. He might be right anyway, but it might not necessarily directly come from that Gemara. So, but on the surface, it seems like Rashi's got a Gemara and the Rambam's got a Gemara. Seems like they both have what to advocate on their behalf. And in terms of the Yerushalmi is important also, but there's an ambiguity in the Yerushalmi, which we will get to in a minute. So let's just talk about these positions for a second, Rashi and the Rambam, and there are a few other important positions, but let's talk about these two for a second. So there is a approach you find, especially in some of the later svar, to cast these positions within a different question. The question being, what is the function of Charisha? Is Charisha specifically to prepare for Zriya? Or is it more independent? And again, the Shear being linked to Zriya was a clue in that direction. So the question is, do we really feel that these two views fit neatly into these two camps, as some have suggested? Now, what are your thoughts about that? Do you feel that you can line up these two views with this question? If we say it's either Ripui Hakarka, right, the two words essentially rhyme, unfortunately, Ripui and Yipui. Right, so we're talking about weakening the ground or improving the ground. So do they line up directly with that question of, are we interested in preparing for Zriya or not, Yehuda?
Well, the practicalities are very similar, but you don't weaken the land in order to grow something.
Well, you do.
You have to put nutrients in it.
Right, but first we have to weaken the ground so we can put our seeds in. So it is for the purpose of growing. The question is, if we treat that as the question, if we say that, are we interested specifically in a Zriya Harisha link, do the Rishonim push us in one direction or another here?
The Rambam just says the apples, it could be the Yipui Karka is from Zriya.
It could be, right. So it could or it could not mean. So I think there's some ambiguity in the Rambam.
Yeah.
Right. The Rambam essentially leaves this open. And Rashi, you probably are pushed a little bit more into a pre-Zriya phase. Right? Rashi, in at least one place, someone pointed out, Rashi does seem to include the idea of Tohu Zriya. And one of the Rashi's, about five Rashi's where he talks about this, sorry?
Same. That Rashi would definitely push you in that direction, but it's very late. You think if that's really, if you saw it so much into that category of Tohu Zriya, that when he introduces Ripui Karka initially, that would be fine.
Should have come up earlier. Right? When does Rashi say this? Rashi says this in
the second example.
And I in Gimel Amid Beis, right? The Rashi of Gumo Tmama. Right, so if you fill it up, afar hainu charesh, afar shemila bo hevi, rafui vitov lizria. So there he's throwing in really kind of tangentially the fact that it is also good for Zriya. So Tovzi's point is that on the one hand, Rashi is apparently making that a part of the conversation. But why didn't he make it a part of the conversation earlier? Why is that? Now, if that's a fundamental requirement, how come that didn't come up before? So it could be, there's an answer to that. It could be it's implicit. It could be he always figured that that's what he would think. He's just pointing it out now once he's talking about. Here there's a little bit of a question that has to be answered, right? What's the value of adding in soil from somewhere else? Normally we have to create a hole to put in soil, to put in seeds. Now we're adding more soil, so what's the advantage of bringing soil from the outside? So maybe he needed to explain that. But okay, so that could be. But it's interesting that he doesn't say it until now. Gil.
When we were looking at the original Mishnah, we had questions on like the shiur, and we said like with food they usually do a shiur of food. So with Zuru, we said like the shiur would be a seed. So since it's the same shiur since Harish is the same shiur as Zuru, wouldn't that also show that it's connected? Because what else?
Right. As we mentioned, there definitely seems to be a linkage that's being highlighted here. Now the question is, what is that connection? Yes, sir. Tom.
According to the idea that you would have that you would say that. It's all connected. Why would you end there? According to that, you should say that the whole point of Zriya is really for Katsira, etc. Tafia. There'd be no end to it. So why wouldn't you?
Right. So that's an important background question to ask. It's an important question, I mean, to have lurking in the background as we consider these questions. That it has to do in general with also a larger malacha question of why some malachos get individual existences and some don't, which is one part of the question. But here, once we're in Sidur at the pass, we know that there's a progression. Right, we know that we're a part of a procedure, 1 through 11. So we know that ideally it's going to be 1, 2, 3, 4, all the way up to 11. So at what point do we decide that you have to be a part of the chain? At what point are we saying that a malacha is only relevant because it affects a later malacha in the chain? And when do we not say that? And part of the other background question to have in mind when you're thinking about that is a general question, the idea of Sidur, the past. there's what to ask. Soloveitchik had a few artists about this, maybe we'll draw on them, that the whole notion of Sidur Depas, the whole idea that there is this bread-making step, does that have any significance to halacha, or is that basically an emanah? And basically, we want a way to remember these first 11 malachas so we can characterize them by projects. So yeah, you want to remember the first 11 malachas, remember, they're the malachas that lead up to bread. And as we noted, that doesn't even work for all the Rishonim, if you don't believe that Lechem Apanim is a relevant part of the Mishkan, of the construction of the Mishkan, so then it's not even the right mashal. But maybe it doesn't matter, maybe it's just there to help us remember, we don't have to worry about how accurate it is. So is it just a mnemonic? Or is there some theme, is there some relevance here? The fact that these malachas are grouped together and given this name, does that somehow affect their halachic character? And maybe there's more of a reason to say there's got to be a progression here than there would be with a random two malachas that are outside Sidur Depas. And maybe there's some price of membership here. The fact that there's a chain, maybe that is significant. Now, even if it is, it won't explain why the other 10 don't have the same kind of linkage. So essentially, your point is well taken as a background kind of question to think about two points. Think about why here would we require more of a linkage than by other, let's say, Sidur Depas malachos. And in general, is there significance to being a part of Sidur Depas? Is it just a way to remember these malachos, or the fact that they're a part of a group, does that say anything? And for example, we mentioned in the context of Zriya that it may affect the Shir. Right? Rashi is saying that it should all be a Grogris, but Harish is different. There seems to be perhaps some common elements or some type of relationship that's maybe worth thinking about as well. Okay, so Rashi perhaps is pointing us in a pre-Zriya frame of mind. The Rambam, there are those who feel that he's saying something else. But we're not sure. Does anyone feel you have any heifer from the Rambam to say one way or another? I don't feel the Rambam's context or language pushes us to say that it's either independent or specifically Zriya related. Yes, sir?
It might be a little bit of a stretch, but the Minchas Tanim said that Rambam Paskin, like Rav Yossi, and then Machlokas Rav Yossi over there, said that the second Harisha was basically just a form of Zriya.
Oh.
So if you say the second Harisha is basically under Zriya, that implies that the first Harisha is completely separate from Zriya.
Oh, so you might be right about that. So we'll get to that. Right? The Rambam, Minchas Tanim was bothered in general why the Rambam doesn't follow a certain pattern in the Gemara about that, so that's an important point, so we'll come to that. Okay, so there is a view. Yes, sir?
Doesn't he mention Nachish? Things like that.
That's Jonathan's point. The point of the Machlokas and the Gemara and the Abbeis and the Beis, where the question of where those two...
No. I'm not talking about that. That was the Kesef Mishnah also.
Okay.
No, but he mentioned specific things like Menachesh Le'iwanos, Mizarin Le'asavim, and things like that. So wouldn't that seemingly not be connected necessarily to...
Tizria.
Or...
It's general.
In fact, I would say, yeah,
it's general field
more work. Connected to Zriya. That you're taking care of the tree, you're taking care of the grass, you're doing specific things.
It's a little ambiguous because the problem is you could take care of the trees and the grass for either reason. You could either do it because you plan on planting around there, or you plan on cultivating the existing growth of these things, or you could do it because your field is better off. And to top things off, even the phrase liapos, we're not 100% sure what it means. So this is somewhat of an ambiguity. So I'm not sure how comfortably we can stuff the Rambam into one camp or another, even though there are some who would like to do so, and maybe they have more justification. But it's not 100% clear, especially because there are others who would seem to really merge the two. So for example, if you look at Rabbeinu Chananel, I don't know if I told you, look at Manap, Rabbeinu Chananel here on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis, he points to the Yerushalmi that Tuvia alluded to earlier. And the Yerushalmi's basic rule of thumb is what? Kol shehu lehanoyas hakarka. Anything that is for the benefit of the karka is choresh. So we could call that a different way of saying liapos, v'yipui hakarka. It's probably a parallel term. But in any event, strictly speaking, seems to be that he's talking about the benefit of the karka. That's the gether of Choresh, which sounds like it's different than the Ripui HaKarka view. Ripui HaKarka is much more limited. It's just about softening the ground, while this is clearly a broader phrase. The thing is, though, in contrast with the Rambam, so here, whether you find it in the Yerushalmi or not, the Yerushalmi itself also is a little bit ambiguous. But the way some understand the Rabbeinu Chananel and the way the Zarua really seems to understand the Yerushalmi, and this is the way the Eglei Tal understands the Rabbeinu Chananel, is that what's the Yerushalmi saying? Anything that's for the good of the karka, so that what? So that you can plant, right? To be told Lizria. So that's specifically putting a view like the Rambam's in the other camp. Right, so we said so far that Rashi seems to really be focused on pre-Zriya preparation, and the Rambam we're not sure. But the Yerushalmi does seem to be like the Rambam, and here there are those who are understanding the Yerushalmi, such as the Or Zeruah, apparently Rabbeinu Chananel with the Eglei Tal, in the pre-Zriya camp as well. Yes, Mike.
What's an example of something which is good for the land in terms of Zriya, but is not softening the land? You could argue that they're really just the same thing.
Well, it could be that watering is not considered watering is
right. Example. So maybe Rabbeinu Chananel saying that watering the land is considered Choresh.
It could be, but that's a machlokus in the Gemara, that maybe it is considered to be Choresh. But there could be a lot of other actions which are not necessarily about softening. Taking away things that get in the way of growth, clearing away space in which to plant, but not softening the land.
It also softens the land.
But not necessarily. Softening has a specific
Roger really seems to take a wide view of what softening the land means.
Does he? Because when he tries to explain all the other Gemaras in light of that.
Right.
I don't know if that means he has a wide view of softening. It means that he's committed to softening, so therefore he finds that in all these
things. He's willing to say that other things which at first glance are not softening.
In the argument, but not necessarily commenting on the Yerushalmi, so it's not clear if we would necessarily be able to apply that definition to everything. So I think there is a broader category that Tolish Olshin is not about softening. But there are other cases which clearly don't really fit to the softening definition and do seem to have a broader picture of what would you call working the land. Was the anima first one?
No.
Okay.
So except for the exception with the Machlokes Rav Yossi and Rava with Mayim and something in the Asavim, because we passed on that. Besides that, in general, if they were to do something to help the land, let's say move a chair off of the ground, just because it's your field, so would you be Chayav on Choresh and Zriya according to that? That would tell everyone?
It's harder to call it Zriya per se, because clearly the Gemara has that ambiguity. Right? The Gemara wants to know about watering the grass. Is that considered to be Choresh or Zriya? So, right, the point is the whole nature of the Machlokas shows that there are overlapping activities. There are activities that could theoretically be both. How exactly do we land on this issue? Also, no pun intended. How exactly do we end up on this issue? And what seems to be our dominant factor that we're going to get to a little bit more. But you're right that there is overlapping territory where you clearly could be scraping the possibility of both. So this, it's interesting, Rabbeinu Chananel here, he also quotes a pasuk in Yeshaya, which I'll read it to you because I have my handy dandy Tanakh here, my Tanakh. And I put the pasuk on the Mar Mekomos, but I wanted to put two psukim, but I think I put the wrong second pasuk, so I'll read you the two psukim together. And it's just interesting what exactly you could be darish from here. This is a set of psukim in the 28th parak of Yeshaya. Yeshaya is in the middle of the speech. So this is the pasuk that Rabbeinu Chananel refers to. And then it's interesting to see what the pasuk is before it. So we'll read the second pasuk first. So the pasuk he refers to is Chaf Ches Chaf Hei, 28:25, and he's talking about a plowman, a Choresh. And he says, "Hello, im Shiva Faneha." And then he goes on to talk about throwing things into the field. But he opens off the expression. He says, "What does he do here? He has prepared a smooth surface, Shiva Paneha." So Rabbeinu Chananel is interested in that, in that definition of Harisha, of making a smooth surface. And he understands from there that it also is for the purposes specifically of planting within that context. And what he doesn't tell you is the pasuk before it. With the pasuk before it says, Hachol hayom yacharosh hachoresh lizroa yifatach v'yisadeh admaso. So all day, the plowman, the one who's plowing, he plows in order to plant. So you can question how much significance to put in the pasuk in terms of is the definition of the choresh lizroa, that his whole purpose in life is to plant. But Rabbi Hanan is interested more in the following pasuk, which uses the example of Harisha as smoothening out the land. And in any event, he says that the whole, the Agli Tal understands, at least from there, that the whole intent there is to say for the purposes of Zriya. So essentially, what do we have so far then? We have basically the view of Rashi that it is weakening the ground, presumably for the purposes of Zriya. We have some ambiguity how strongly he's saying that, but it's likely. We have the Rambam, who says that it's about working the land, improving the land, but we're not sure if he's connecting it to Zriya or not. So we see that other Rishonim, who also focus on a broader definition, do seem to be pushing us towards working the land. But there are those who don't. There is the Shita Laharan on Ayin Gimel Amud Beis. Shita was a Rishon at the time of the Ran, who the Ran brings. So the Shita Laharan, which I didn't put in the Mar Mekom, I don't know how easily you'd be able to get a hold of it, but I'll send the text to Corey, so maybe we'll have it for tomorrow. The Shita Laharan says explicitly that Avodas HaKarka is not always for the purposes of planting. And he comments on the Gemara. The Gemara says about Notel Givshushis, about somebody who's going to take a clump of land off the ground, and if he does it in his house, he's doing it Mishambonah. So the Shita Laharan there says, yeah, it's not always that a person is necessarily interested in planting, and he's still potentially entering Choresh territory, Choresh outside, Boneh inside. So here you have a Rishon explicitly saying the other way.
Is the Shita Laharan also the Chiddush Eran?
It's in the Chiddush Eran. Yeah, some printing mysteries there. But yeah, so you saw that inside?
Yeah, I thought it was
Chiddush Eran. Yeah, it's pretty, yeah, so I think it's not the Ran. I'll send a text around tomorrow. Yeah.
Isn't that like a blatantly obvious like proof from the Gemara? How come Rashi and Rav Hanan didn't what did they say about that?
Well, so then that prompts another question, which is where I think is what you're getting at, which is also worth throwing into the mix. What do we do about the fact that our Gemara seems to link Choresh and Boneh? We have these two actions, one action rather. If you do it outside, it's Choresh. If you do it inside, it's bone, right?
That's why Rashi said that it was Rifui Karka plus it was good for Zriya.
Mm-hmm.
He says that the qualification of that makes it not bone, that makes it Choresh, that it was good for Zriya, as opposed to doing it inside, which means it's bone.
Right, but the question I'm interested in is, when you do it inside, the Gemara seems to be paralleling, seems to be grouping together these two malachas, Choresh and bone. So we could ask, it's a worthwhile question to think about, what's the nature of that relationship? Not just what's the nature of Choresh and Zareya, but what's the nature of Choresh and Bonin? Because you could understand that two ways. You could say, if we believe that Choresh is just an objective avodas karka, not necessarily connected to Zriya, so then they're really the same thing. It's just a question of context. And then the linkage is very strong. And we'd understand why the Gemara puts the two together. That Choresh and Boneh, it's like Zareya and Noteya. It's basically the same action depending on what you're working with. So Choresh is working on the land outside, and Boneh is working on the land inside. Well, if we say that Choresh is really linked to Zriya, so then Boneh doesn't really have much to do with Choresh. It's just that they have an external similarity, that the same type of action will violate Choresh outside and Boneh inside, but you'd have to say for completely different reasons. Just happens to be, perhaps coincidental, let's say, that there's a commonality between Choresh and Boneh. So that's a big area to investigate. What exactly is the nature of the fact that Gemara is grouping them? Are they grouping them because they're fundamentally the same? And if it's a vodas akarka, then they really do seem to be very, very similar. Or are they completely different? It's about Zariah, and bonus has nothing to do with Zariah, and the only commonality is that they involve the same action. And this is going to impact on something else, which we'll talk in a few minutes. What is the basis for differentiating between Sada and Bayis? As the Gemara says, you do something in the Sada, it's called Choresh, and you do the same thing in the house, it's called Bona. So how are we defining Sada and how are we defining Bayis? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. It's not necessarily an obvious differentiation. There could be things that may fall between the cracks. And what if the definition is totally dependent on whether there's Ria or not? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. We'll come back to that point in a few minutes, and that's also going to reflect this issue. It's just also interesting. The Egli Pal is a little bit bothered by one of these Rashis that talks about Rifoyara. So Rashi says that when you're taking the ground out, so then Rashi has this language. I'll show you the Rashi. Rashi says that the ground that you have dug out is soft. Mm-hmm. Where's that Rashi? So what bothers the Egli Tal about this Rashi is he doesn't understand. So when you take the ground out, so that ground's going to be soft, but that's not going to do anything to the ground that you're planting. So you're softening the ground that you're removing. What about the ground that's underneath? So if it's about Zariah, so then aren't we more interested, we talked about this, right? Aren't we more interested in the, I mean, talked about the base manager, aren't we more interested in the land, in the ground that's going to be left for you to plant it?
I thought Rashi was talking about when you put the dirt back into the hole.
That's not how the Egli Tal assumes. He's worried, he's assuming you're leaving the dirt out, and he's wondering about how this, he says, so maybe, he says, it could be doichet, and say that the ground underneath also gets weakened when you take out the ground above it.
Well, that would seem to be some gamshushis, that's how Rashi understands.
Right, so that's what that's what Rashi was talking about. So that's what seems to bother him. He says he doesn't understand how this has an effect. This is an act of rifoyara, but it's not rifoyara that has any link to anything that's going to be planted afterwards. So that we wanted to have that.
I was going to say, it sounds just more about, you know, Farmer John here, but how you, when you lift up the dirt, whether you remove like some of the weeds and stuff, and therefore it seems like Rashi is trying to just explain the case that it is affecting the ground underneath.
Right, so I would think, that's why I don't think it's such a tchak, it happens to be the Egli Tal is bothered by it, and he says, yes, maybe it means that the ground underneath also gets softened, but he finds that to be a dope. So I'm not sure, Matthias-wise, why that's such a dope, it could be that that really is what happened. But in general, it's also interesting, I wonder if there's any room to say that maybe it doesn't matter according to Rashi. Because this is a question I have to ask here in general. But let's say we assume, especially if we are willing to say that the Rambam is also focused on Zariah, not like the Shifa Laram. So far we've seen now two different versions in the Rishonim of what Avodas Karka is for, either objective or for purposes of Zariah, and we're not sure where the Rambam fits into that equation. So let's say we were to say that he is about preparing for Zariah. So it's interesting that maybe what seems to be a difference here between Rashi and the Rambam is not like Yachronim we mentioned before, who want to put them in separate camps, pre-Zariah and not pre-Zariah, but they're both about pre-Zariah. So if they're both about pre-Zariah, what's the difference between Rashi and the Rambam then? Seems like the Rambam is willing to take a more purposeful view and say any of the different activities that you do in order to prepare the land for Zariah is all considered to be within Chareishim. Somewhat similar to the view we mentioned that he has towards Avos, we saw in the context of Zareah, where he was willing to call anything that provokes growth an av of Zariah
So too, okay, his definition of Harisha is more purpose-based. All of the different, we'll give it a function, we'll give a function of, we'll give a form, the form of avodos karka, but many different avodos karka are included as long as they are pushing towards preparing for Zriah. While Rashi also is interested in preparing for Zriah, but he seems to feel like we are committed to a certain form, that there's a certain surah of the malacha. And that would seem to be a difference between them. The Rambam seeing it more based on anything that accomplishes this goal. And Rashi seeing it, no, specifically about preparing for Zriah through breaking up the earth, through weakening the earth. Yes, sir?
Even according to the Shita L'Aran, this prime is the most extreme. There's still going to be some Zriah connection. If you're Koryashan Asela, you're not going to be Chayav. Has to be a month
of though we're not 100% sure, you have to figure out what the gather of the cell is. It could be a turn to bone. It just might be a contextual issue.
But this seems like Gemara that either you have bone and sada, then there might be that middle ground.
Right, that middle ground is where things are a little mysterious. We'll have to try to see how that plays out. It could be right. It could be that maybe it's just kind of a karmelus. We have this mukhmukhtur, right? We have this basic nomad in the middle, but just a definitional issue. So we'll see about that. But it seems to be here that if we say it this way, that maybe really Rashi and the Rambam both agree that we're interested in preparing for Zriah. While the Rambam feeling it can be a broader set of activities, and Rashi feels it has to have this specific surah of breaking up ground for this purpose. I wonder if it's possible to say, maybe this is a stretch, but maybe you could answer the Eglay Tal's question by saying that according to Rashi, it's good enough that you have two activities here happening together. You're breaking up the ground, and you're doing it to prepare for Zriah. The fact that you're doing that in two separate steps, so to speak, doesn't matter. So the Eglay Tal was bothered by the fact that the ground that you're softening is not going to be the ground that you're planting. But maybe Rashi doesn't have to worry about that. Maybe Rashi has what he needs. You're preparing for Zriah. And you're preparing for Zriah through the softening of ground. Does that make any sense? I don't know. It's a thought that maybe that reflects a different way of looking at this Rashi-Rambam issue. So just to recap that point, I mentioned there are many who feel that Rashi and Rambam are divided by the whole function of Harisha. We see there's some room to wonder about what Harisha is for according to the Rambam. So maybe they actually share the idea of the pre-Zriah focus, and the question is just whether it could be a broader set of activities or it has to have this specific surah of breaking up the soil. So this affects a number of other issues, as was raised a few minutes ago. So to what extent do we require that in order for there to be Harisha, Harisha has to be on land that is royal Israel, on land that is actually going to be subject or at least possible for you to be planting it. Now, do we find any indication that it has to be royal Israel? Yes, sir?
Gemara
where? Gemara Pesachim.
It talks about Sunman.
Right, that's the Gemara Pesachim. So Gemara Pesachim and Mem Zayin says that you can't apparently have, or seems to suggest strongly that you can't have Harisha on rocky ground. Then if you have ground that is all essentially stones that you're chopping up, you can't really plant there. So it sounds like from that Gemara that it's not going to be Harisha. Then the Gemara says, well, you're right, we have to answer that question, so it must be that under the rocky ground, under the tzunma, there is ground that you can work with. There is much finer soil underneath. So it sounds like from that Gemara, like you would only have Harisha in such a context where at least it's possible to have Zriah. So this is where there was that whole discussion we touched upon a little bit that seems to say you can't have Harisha in a desert. And why is that a big problem for our development of Lachos?
The
because the desert was the source of where the malachos originally took place. So this is an issue that Rishonim talk about. Sammy doesn't seem to be too bothered by it.
We already answered it.
Right, we discussed, so it came up in the context of Zeriah. So Tosfos in Chulin says that, yeah, it miraculously, the desert bloomed, and they were able to miraculously plow and grow things in the desert. There's an Orach Chaim from Mir Chumash where he says that the Be'er of Miriam properties that it was able to water the ground so that it was able to flourish. That's
Is there a problem like nowadays where we clearly are growing things in the desert?
That's also an ace.
Like Mishka
Tia. Yeah. That's with growing things from the desert or
I'm
in the desert.
I mean, it's right. You just go to there and you're in sand, like desert, sand.
So you're saying if we have now figured out a way to grow something in territory X, so presumably, yes, presumably you would call that a Harisha, although there is room to maybe then start questioning it, because maybe you could say that Harisha is only on Karka that qualifies as Karka. So we'll have to talk about that in some of the Halacha L'maisa distinctions, because it could make a difference. But the Mechas Chinuch took the approach to this whole desert thing by saying that it doesn't really have to bother us because the malachos, the Mishkan, again, we mentioned this possibility when we talked about Zeriah, it doesn't have to actually be that they physically did it. It means the things one would have had to do in order to have what they needed for the Mishkan, those are what are considered to be malachos. And if, in the time of the Mishkan, they were able to do this through divine assistance, that doesn't affect us, but that's still the template for what's considered to be a malach. So that's a side issue, that if we say there is an exemption for something that's not royal Israel, it would seem to exclude deserts, so we got to figure out how exactly we did this in the Midbar. But otherwise, this Gemara and Psachim seems to be a big indication that it needs to be royal Israel, and that's something that we're going to have to figure out. That's something that is an issue. Yes, sir.
Even if you say from here that it's proof that it has to be royal to Zeriah, it doesn't imply that it has to be something that you're going to leave to Zeriah.
Oh, correct. Now, so then, once you ask that question, now you could ask the question afterwards. So do you have to then have specific intent to plant in it? So that's much harder to say. Right? It's much harder to say that we're going to make one malacha contingent on another malacha. Because that you don't really find, except for examples such as mechabe. Sorry? Right, so here these are malachos which are essentially mekalkel, you know, which are essentially destructive, so sramanas, livnos, etc. So there it's not because the two malachos are linked, but it's because otherwise this would be a destructive act. Now you could say actually chofer, choresh could also be a destructive act. So you could theoretically group these with those. That would be a chiddush. But and then maybe you could make such a chiddush and say that really this is another form of almanaz, because essentially choresh is a destructive act, and therefore it could have been grouped with Soser and Mochek and Mechabe and all those malachos, which only make the list because they prepare for productive acts. Right, although this is different than all the other those other three, because those other three are all about opposites. Right? I got to make the space for a building, I have to erase so I can write, I have to put out something so I can set fire to it again. All of that is a direct opposite relationship. Here, these are two steps in a process. So if they're two steps in a process, so what makes them any different than the rest of the steps in Sidur Depas? That's your question from before. Now, you could say the answer is like you just indicated now, that maybe Choresh, really, essentially, you're breaking up land, or you're digging, you're taking away land. Maybe Choresh is essentially a Mekalkel issue, as the Gemara kind of suggests over here. Right? The Gemara kind of suggests that when you're doing it not for the purposes of planting or of improving something, that it has a Kilkel component. So maybe Choresh really should be like Mechabe and Soser and Korea, for example. So if that's the case, that could maybe explain why it might be linked to Zeriah in a way that the other Sidur Depas Malachas aren't. Because maybe all the other Sidur Depas Malachos are objectively constructive. And maybe Choresh should have been considered something bad. Should have been considered something destructive. And the only reason it makes the cut is because it has its real relationship. So then maybe you could even go so far as to say it has to actually be not only Roy Lizria, but Amanas Lizro, which again would be quite a chiddush. There is a Pnei Yoshua that has a comment along these lines. Be aware of that. There is a little Tosfos here, which maybe you looked at, maybe you didn't. A very short Tosfos. That Tosfos, the first Tosfos in Gimel Amud Beis, talks about why is it that the Gemara is bothered by Zoreya before Choresh. Right? The Gemara says, since really you do Choresh before Zoreya, so why is it that Mishnah lists Zoreya before Charisha and tells us the whole story about the difference in Eretz Yisrael and elsewhere. So Tosfos says, this first Tosfos was Michti, Lo Shayach L'meidach Hachi, B'hadik Sani HaMechab V'Reisha, B'hadar HaMavir, Tahacha kol sidur de pas nakat keseder levar mi charisha. So Tosfos says you could have asked the question if you're talking about actions that go out of order. So what about machab and mavir, putting out a fire before lighting a fire? Presumably you have to light a fire in order to put it out, not necessarily, but presumably that's out of order too. So how come the Gemara doesn't get upset about every out of order set of malachas? So Tosfos says, maybe it's just because Sidur, the Pas, again, is somehow special, and everything's been in order when it comes to Sidur, the Pas, and why is this the only out-of-order set of malachos within that Seder? That's Tosfos' approach. The Pnei Yoshua says, I can give you a better answer. I'll give you a better answer because since it's taken for granted, says the Pnei Yoshua, that Charisha is only relevant when it is at least applicable to Zriya. And if you are a Choresh in land that is not Shayach for Zriya, there's no Charisha. So therefore, it's interesting that the Mishnah puts Charisha after Zriya. So therefore, it's more of a Chiddush to tell you that yes, there is a Charisha even after Zriya, as long as it's still Shayach this whole process of planting. So you could have a Charisha that's helpful for the planting after the Zriya, that's what the Gemara basically explains. But the Gemara has to explain that, says the Pnei Yoshua, because you could have thought you wouldn't be chayav for such a thing. You could have thought that the only Charisha is a pre-Zriya Charisha. So Kamash Malon, no, it happens to be that there's also a Charisha after Zriya, but still only within the context of Zriya. It still has to be a Zriya that is possible. So far, so good. Everybody following? Make sense? Okay, so let's try to mention a few more points, and then we'll try to take stock of what we've seen so far. So as we alluded to a few minutes ago, what about this question between Bona and Choresh, about the relationship between Bona and Choresh? Is it a real relationship, or is it only an incidental relationship? So this could affect the definition of Sada and Bais. And if the Gemara says that the same type of action, if you do it out in the field, that's called Choresh. If you smooth over the floor outside, that's called Choresh. And if you do it inside, that's called Bona. So what's the definition of inside or outside? So we talk about non-arable land. So what if you have land that is workable theoretically, but you know it's not shaykh for it to happen? For example, a graveyard. Right, what if you smooth over a grave? So that is avodas karka. So the outside, it's not being done for the purposes of planting. And presumably you're not going to be planting there. So the Magen Avraham, and if you saw the Magen Avraham or not, the Magen Avraham assumes that, doesn't assume, he has a little bit of discussion about it, that's not an Isser D'oraisa. Why not? He says, because maybe you only have the definition of a Sada when you're talking about a Sada that is shayach for planting. So here you have, again, not so much the physicality of not Omid Lizria, but the Metzias of not being Omid Lizria. Yes?
Example, graveyard. Stuff will grow, it's just that you're not...
Right, you're not trying to help it grow.
Precise,
presumably, because you're not trying to help it grow.
Yeah. So we could ask you something that you want to go, like that Koso says.
It's not in the, but you're doing this is not in the service of growth. You know, this is not something that you're cultivating, that anyone's cultivating. If something grows, it's incidental.
So that's right. So it has to be something
that people grow. It's not omedes lizria, right? Kodesh Baruch Hu can make something grow on it, but it's not omedes lizria.
Hi. Isn't that similar to what the Orz Zeruah was talking about?
Mm-hmm.
And even if you're, that's where you use the secret. Even if you're washing your hands somewhere, you don't care whether it's going to grow or not.
So except when it comes to Zeria, so then the Zeria is directly relevant to its growing. So if you're watering the ground, so even if you're not interested in watering the ground, but you're watering the ground will bring about Zeria. But here, your plowing is not, you're not going to then put seeds in it. The seed, whatever grows there is growing already. This is not plowing for that purpose. Night.
I think the language Rashi used when he said to talk about the Bible was Lochazi Lazria. So we're saying that that's what the Magen Avraham is saying. Meaning, how do we understand what?
So he seems to be saying that in that case, since you're not gonna, this is not a plowed field, so the a plowing field is not a field in which you plant.
No,
then
you can't.
Right. So it's not physically impossible, but it's not shayach. It's not going to happen there. So therefore, that's a chiddush. You know, that's also considered to be separated from Zeria and from Harisha. So in that context, he says, essentially the definition of bias versus Sada is that Sada has to be a outside, not just outside, but it has to be outside HaRoy L'Zeria. That when the Gemara is talking about these differences, so the differences are not simply structural, not simply based on first we look at what's where we are, and then we figure out whether it's Choresh or Bona. But Choresh is going to be tied in specifically to the possibility, the likelihood of Zeria. And the definition of Sadeh for the purposes of Choresh is going to be tied in specifically to the context of Zeria as well. So that's an interesting point of possible relevance to a few other things. While we're on the subject of the Magen Avraham and his definitions, so the Magen Avraham also elsewhere talks about an interesting thing which could also be relevant to this whole story. What would you say about somebody who has some garbage on the floor outside, which is looks like it's essentially part of the floor, but is not really part of the floor? Say some manure or something like that that's fallen on the floor, but it's not connected. So can you lift that up on Shabbos in terms of issues of Choresh? Is this an issue of notal gavshushes? So the issue is that it's not actually connected to the ground. It's just on top of the ground. So what does it mean when the Gemara says you're not allowed to do that? Does that mean that you have one big clump of ground and some of it is uneven, so you're going to take off an uneven part? Or does it mean, no, we're talking about something which is at all on top of the ground, creating some type of a unevenness? And if you take that off, that's automatically Choresh. So the Magen Avraham seems to be concerned that that's an aspect of Choresh. Apparently it doesn't have to actually be connected. While others are not so sure, the Shvitzus HaShabbos quotes two opinions about this. He says if you have, let's say, a pile of wood, and you want to pick that up, is that considered to be an act of notal gevshusha, something like that? So it's not connected to the ground. Is that an issue? So he quotes two opinions. And the Chai Adam seems to be of the opinion that no, it has to be specifically connected in order for it to be subject to this definition. So does that plug into our discussion about the gather of Choresh at all? What do you think? Well, what are we talking about? We talk about improving the land. Right? So it could be that this is still called improving the land. And the land's got schmutz on it. So if you're going to take that off, so now the land is better. So in the broader sense of avodas karka, maybe this does qualify. But in the sense of softening the ground so that you can plant on it, it's probably less clear that that's a relevant definition. I don't know if you have that.
Yes, that means that if I go around like kicking garbage off the ground, then I'm doing Tarisha?
Potentially. It would probably depend on how much, well, first of all, you have those views who disagree with this. You could have other Isurim involved with the fee, what other possible concepts could come up. But presumably, it doesn't mean you have an isolated soda bottle on the floor. But you have something that's essentially created a pile. So we could use the example of manure, perhaps. Something is basically made the ground uneven, but it's not uneven because the ground itself is uneven. It's concrete, but or essentially flat ground, but you have something on top of it. Again, the question of whether concrete is subject to harish itself is a question. That's not the best example. But you have something which is totally flat, and you have some type of garbage on top of it that's not a part of the ground. So taking that off, is that going to be potentially subject to harisha? So that's also presumably ties into this question, at least in a broader sense. Hi.
What issues does Rabbi say about this?
He quoted two opinions about this, about whether or not it's potentially a violation of harisha in such a setting.
It's only
going to
be things that are could integrate to the ground.
Maybe not.
Because you could do a stack of books.
Uh-huh. Right, what you say a stack of books is clear.
You have a huge mound of books, and you clear that. It's hard to say that that's even according to
right.
The Shizula.
Probably, except that the question is why is that true? Right? Instinctively, that sounds like it's true. Question is why. So is it because books are just so clearly discrete items? So therefore, they're not, they never blend into the, never blend into the surface? But where do we draw the line? Maybe when you have something, we know that we're talking about various household activities, which could be under this category. So the line is a little bit vague. I think you're probably right that books don't seem to fit into it, but probably because they're so clearly separate. But maybe when you say integrate, so you mean just consider it to be batel, or you mean actually physically seep into the ground?
I meant either batel or, like, if you have a... Another example of something that wouldn't necessarily integrate into the ground but would be physically in it. Mm-hmm. If you went around picking bottle caps out of the sand,
right.
That could seem much closer to the Tacharisha.
Even closer than the books. Especially according to the Shizul Haran.
Exactly, because it's
right. Right. Yeah, makes sense. Okay. So another issue that just comes out of this whole question of the relationship between Harisha and Zriya. Is there is a suffix in the Magen Avos and in the Minchas Chinuch. What if a person wants to be choresh inside of his atzit she'ein onakuv? Right, let's say he has a sizable atzit she'ein onakuv, right, which is possible. Say he has a whole big atzit she'ein onakuv in his house, in his basement. So he wants to be choresh in that. So is that a potential violation of Harisha Menat Torah?
That's
in the sandbox. And the sandbox, we're not sure about sand yet. But and sand itself is also an issue. You know, sand's what seems to be in the category of Afar Tihuach, and that we saw also, or if you saw in the Maamar Kamos, there's a whole debate in Rishonim about to what extent that fits into this category. Maybe we'll have to pick up on that a little bit more tomorrow. But what about this Atzah She'en Anokul question? How does that, this really opens up a new line of analysis in this issue. Why? Because here, want to comment on this? Yeah.
We said that Zriya might not even be the right sentence.
Oh, right. So what does that mean to say Zriya is not the right? That's clearly the relevant issue. But what does it mean to mean Zriya is not possible?
Well, if you say that Harisha is, if you say that Zriya is not the right, because it's not Derek, which is the way we described it previously.
Right.
Mm-hmm. We said that Harisha is based on, the closer you see Harisha to Zriya, on one hand, you're going to see it as an impossibility to do Harisha in an area that you can never have a Doris Zriya.
Correct. That seems to be the case. But it's interesting, also, this opens up a whole new direction because, technically speaking, this is not the desert case, nor is it the cemetery case. Because it's both possible to grow in this, and you may indeed be growing in this. You probably will be growing. Maybe that's why you're plowing. So here you are plowing arable land for the purpose of growing in it. So what's the only glitch? What's the only thing getting in the way? That there's no din of Zriya. Right? There's no Zriya Daraisa. So there's no Malacha of Zriya. So that's a whole new level of linkage, that maybe not only is Charisha considered to be preparatory for Zriya, but it would be preparatory for the Malacha of Zriya, which is a bigger Chiddush, because maybe all this time when we've been talking about Charisha and Zriya being connected, maybe we could just really be talking about the definition of Charisha. What does Charisha mean? What do the words mean? The word Charisha means you are plowing land so you can plant in it. So if that's the case, so I could believe, all right, if I happen to be for some technicality punter for this Zriya that I'm going to do, I should still be in violation of Charisha in such a case. So this is a very interesting test case, if you're going to say it's a case where it's really functionally a Zriya, but you happen to be putter because of a Kedarach issue. So the Malacha of Zriya is not here. To say that gets you off from Charisha opens up a whole new avenue in terms of this linkage. Yes, sir?
In terms of the connection that we made, let's say from Sotham, because it's not rowing that's smoke. Not that you're going to be, not that it's, because over there you're going to do the Malacha of Zriya. It talks about being rowing that's smoke. So why should it matter whether or not you're actually, because of the technicality, officially over the Zriya? It's rowing that's smoke still.
I think it's surprising to say that it matters. I agree with you that I think the first instinct would be that it doesn't matter. Right, so to say that it might matter is a bigger chiddush. That's definitely a surprising idea. So here you're really saying then that the malachos are linked. And like we said before, so why should the malachos be linked? That's not obvious, and it's not normally the case that two malachos are linked. So far we've considered that maybe it's somehow connected to a sidur depas issue, or maybe it's somehow considered to the fact that Choresh might be makalkel otherwise, unless we link it to a malacha. So it's not an obvious point. It's what we have to try to figure out. Because it would have been easier to say until now, and you don't have to buy this point, you could not accept this tli at all, but if you accept the mechaschina of Magen Avos who are making these connections, then maybe you're really saying something else. You're saying not just that the definition of charisha is a act of pre-zriya, but that it's really linked, it's really married to the malacha of Zriya. So this also could affect our understanding of the Gemara in Moed Katan and that Beis and Midbeis, that whole Gemara that raises the question of where watering the ground and weeding the ground, how exactly that should be assigned to Zriya or Charisha, and the Rambam's splitting the difference on that issue. So that we'll probably get to tomorrow. I just want to recap what we said to make sure that we're on top of everything. So tomorrow, let's try to discuss that Gemara a little bit more about the Moed Katan Beis and the Beis, and talk a little bit also about this Gemara that's relevant to Malacha Shein Tzricha L'Gufa, even though that's something we're not up to yet, but just a little bit about what's going on there. And also the question of the toldos or not toldos that come up here, the other actions which same way we saw with Zareya, are either toldos or not, or toldos or meinahav or avos. Let's try to talk about all that tomorrow, and again, with an aim really of finishing Charisha within this week and not carrying it over. But just to quickly recap what we've said today, so we talked about this question of what is the definition of Charisha. There were those who suggested it has to do with weakening the land, those who suggested it has to do with working the land, and those who suggested it has to do with preparing the land for planting, and those were all different points which may or may not come together. We saw that Rashi seems to really be an advocate of weakening the land. He has that in a number of places. Presumably he means specifically for the purpose of Zriya, but there's only one place where he actually says that, and it's questionable if it's relevant to the whole definition. The Rambam says that it's about Avodas Karka, and it sounds like he's talking about that independently. That's how some Achronim want to say it. Rashi's pre-Zriya, the Rambam is not. But we weren't sure about that in the Rambam, because we saw other Rishonim who focus on the Karka, on the Avodas Karka, sometimes based on the Yerushalmi. And those other Rishonim, some of them really do indicate that it's about for the purposes of Zriya. That's the way it sounds like from the Orzeruah, the way the Eglat Tal understood the Rabbeinu Chananel. The Rabbeinu Chananel also quoted the interesting pasuk in Yeshaya, which may have some relevance to this. So on the other hand, you have the Shita L'Haran, who says specifically the other way, that it's all about working the karka even when it's not in connection with Zriya. So two different ways to understand the Avodas Karka angle, and we're not sure which one the Rambam fits in. And then we suggested, based on the Eglei Tal's question, the Eglei Tal has this question of how could it be that Rashi could say weakening the land is beneficial if it's not land that you're going to be planting, it's land that you're throwing away. So Eglei Tal had an approach to that question. We suggested that maybe you could look at it a little bit of a different way, that maybe the difference between Rambam and Rashi is that they both agree that it's about pre-Zriya, not like those who would put the Rambam in a different camp. And the only question is, do you have a broader view of it like the Rambam does, or do you feel it has to be married specifically to this action of weakening the land? And if that's the case, maybe Rashi could be okay with the Eglei Tal's question, that you have both elements, even though they're not exactly in the same clump of land, but that you have both weakening the land and you're doing this for the purpose of Zriya, maybe that's enough for him to have all the parts come together. And then we talked about all this question leading up to, does it have to be actual land that is royal Zriya? That's certainly the strong implication of the Gemara in Pesachim about the Tsunma, that one would not be chayiv in such a case. Prompting the question, so what about deserts? How do you have the Malachos done from the Mishkan? If you can't do it in the desert, we mentioned the different approaches, Tosfos, that it actually did bloom then, the Orachayim, that the bear of Miriam was able to water it, and the Menachas Chinuch, that it doesn't matter, is the Malacha that's potentially for these purposes, that counts even if they didn't actually functionally do that for that purpose. So we mentioned the Pnei Yeshua, who says that Tosfos' question of why do we pay attention to Choresh before Zriya and not the other way around, and we don't pay attention to other such malachas like Machab and Mabir, so Tosu says it's because it's Dur Depas, and Pnei Yeshua says, no, it's a better reason, it's because you might have thought you're not Chayiv for Harisha after Zriya, and therefore that's what we have to emphasize. We'll talk a little bit more about that point tomorrow as well, because that has some other implications also. And then we talked about the definition of Sada and Bias. We raised the question in general, what's the Gemara's relationship between Choresh and Bona meant to convey? That if it's about Avodas Karka, then really they are the same, they just have two different settings. But if it's about preparing for Zriya, they're really completely different, they just have external similarities. And that could affect a number of things, including our definition of what goes in the Sada category and what goes in the Bias category. And we saw the Magen Avram who says that really it has to be not just physically possible, but also made for purposes of Zriya, and therefore a cemetery grave would not be, a grave specifically would not be in this category. And we mentioned also, while talking about the Magen Avraham, his position that the idea of notal gevshushas could apply even to something that's not actually connected to the land, which was two days in the Shvisha Shabbos and the Nishmas Adam Chayodam saying differently. And then we talked a little bit about the question of whether it's not just about the act of Zriya, the possibility of Zriya, but maybe about the Malacha of Zriya. We mentioned the Menachas Chinuch and the Magen Avos having a suffix about whether you could be chayiv for Harisha in a She'eino Nakuv, and potential implications for that. We said that's a very big chiddush, and if you're going to say that way, you would say the linkage between Zriya and Harisha is not just in terms of defining what Harisha is, but maybe really more about the Malachos being linked. We raised some possibilities about why the Malachos might be linked. Either it's a Siddur Depas thing, or it reflects the fact that Harisha could have been negative, otherwise could have been Mekalkel, and maybe it needs Zriya in order to justify its constructive existence. On that note, I wish you a wonderful day, constructive day, and Be'ez Hashem, we'll pick up on this tomorrow morning with our early Tuesday show. Have a fantastic day.
Can you count the graveyard?
Count the what?
The graveyard?
As bonus.